Hello. Later today, the online forms that can't be filled in if you're visually impaired, and the dogs that won't come back when you call them. Both questions from you, which we've been trying to get answers to. But first, the budget. New Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves, has made it very clear there are areas where she intends to save money, and one of those is the welfare benefits bill. She's targeting benefit fraud, which no one except the fraudsters would quarrel with, but she has another target.
Today, I am also taking three steps to ensure that welfare spending is more sustainable. First, we inherited the last government's plans to reform the work capability assessment. We will deliver those savings as part of our fundamental reforms to the health and disabilities benefit system that my right honourable friend, the Work and Pensions Secretary, will bring forward.
Work capability assessments were introduced originally by the previous Labour government and were designed to place a time limit on how long people could claim the higher employment and support allowance unless the assessment showed that they really needed it. It's always been controversial, some people claiming that it put unfair pressure on disabled people to get jobs which weren't really open to them. The previous government was in the process of reviewing the benefit before the general election, also with a view to reform work capability assessments. Richard Kramer, Chief Executive of Sense, a charity which represents people with complex disabilities, including people with the dual disabilities of deafness and blindness, was quick to react. He said the government's decision is deeply disturbing for disabled people. They've chosen, he said, to continue the previous government's harmful plans to reduce access to benefits. And this risks undermining the well-being of disabled people. Well, Richard Kramer joins me. Richard, it's a very strong reaction, and it's not as if the government is introducing something new, is it? I mean, these assessments have been in place for over 15 years.
Yes, this budget has caused a huge amount of anxiety for disabled people, many who rely on benefits to survive and are anxious about the future. And this is because the government have committed to cut the welfare bill by £3 billion, but without properly sharing the detail how they'll do that.
Just to get some of the details sorted out, can you just explain how these assessments work and what effect they have on your benefits if the decision is that you do have some capacity to work with the right level of support?
So work capability assessment determines whether a person's disability limits their ability to work and therefore their access to universal credit. And the government, the last government's plan was to tighten work capability assessment to save money. And that would mean in 3 years' time, more than 424,000 disabled people who are unable to work will be worse off by more than £400 a month. So that would be a disaster for disabled people. Now, the government says, well, we'll get more people into work. But the Office for Budget Responsibility suggests that at most, by making these changes, only 15,000 more people were getting to work out of the 424,000. So most people will be worse off. At the same time, the government is saying, well, you know, we're going to do these cuts, but we're going to look at reforming the system properly. And when we want to do that in conjunction with disabled people. But we're saying, actually, you should do that first before making a hasty decision to look at savings, which could come with huge costs for people down the line.
We'll come back to the issue of getting more people into work. But can I just put this point to you? Programmes like ours and organisations like yours are keen to stress the capabilities of disabled people, including the capability to work. Aren't governments entitled to establish whether someone is able to work rather than see them, you know, having to be permanently reliant on benefits?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, we need to celebrate the fact that benefits are really helpful in helping people lead more independent, meaningful lives. And of course, the benefit system is not perfect, but it's a real mark of a civilised society that there is support for people who can't work or who face additional financial pressures because they're disabled. And government is right to reduce the barriers to work. And that needs to be accompanied by real efforts to address employers' attitudes towards disability, to support people to make reasonable adjustments in the workplace, and to help support people in work and remain in work. So that's all really, really positive. Unfortunately, too many people experience barriers into work. Just to take one example, if a visually impaired person goes to the job centre, they can't get accessible support from job centre staff because the assistive technology is not there. And you would think by now that every job centre would have screen readers, magnification software, refreshable braille display and headphones, but they don't. So at the very first hurdle, disabled people can't get the support in job centres, never mind the support in work. And that's why Sense and other charities are calling for additional funding for assistive technology.
You raise the issue of barriers. I mean, there are some direct employer attitudes, which a recent report from the All-Party Parliamentary Group on eye health and visual impairment has shown. Continuing large numbers of employers unwilling to take disabled people on. Almost half of them don't have accessible recruitment methods. And a quarter said that they wouldn't consider having special adaptations for blind people. I mean, these issues of the barriers, that's something that the government does have to consider, doesn't it? And deal with if it wants to get more people into work.
It does need to be addressed, but I think that's more a case of disability charities working alongside employers so that employers have a better understanding and are supported in the workplace, rather than the attitude of saying employers getting it wrong, they're discriminatory, they're failing. We need to support employers to make those reasonable adjustments in the workplace. But also we need to reform the benefit system. And that has an impact on employers, because if we take the experience of the NHS, they've introduced an accessible information standard which sets out best practice for communicating with disabled patients. Why can't we have that for the DWP as well, when they're providing support around the benefit system or support for people into work?
To be fair, presumably those are some of the things that the government are going to be looking at. The Department for Work and Pensions told us the work capability assessment is simply not working. It needs to be reformed or replaced as part of a proper plan to genuinely support people into work, bringing down the benefit bill and ensuring we continue to deliver the saving set out by the previous government. The Chancellor says the government will be producing a white paper looking at the issue of large numbers of people not being part of the workforce. Isn't that the place to find a solution to this? And will you be attempting to influence its findings?
Yes, very much so. The starting point is that we want a fairer benefit system. And a fairer benefit system needs to be co-produced with disabled people, including those with visual impairments. The second thing is, how can we have a benefit system that's more accessible, easier to navigate? And how can we work with organisations like Sense to develop and invest in bespoke employment support that gets people into work? And they should be the starting point for discussions in the new year. And certainly Sense will be taking part.
Well, the government, they tell us they'll be introducing these reforms in early 2025. So we shall see. Richard Kramer, thank you very much. Now to some of your questions, which have come in over the past few weeks and which we've been trying to get answers to. The new government is certainly trying to convince us that it genuinely wants to know what we think of some of its policies. For example, its strategy on the future of the NHS. The problem is, we're also hearing from several visually impaired people that they want to contribute to that, but are finding the website inaccessible. Margaret Deans, for example, who has been a nurse for many years and is now a patient.
I couldn't log in because I couldn't expand the text big enough to be able to type my email address into. So then I went through the NHS app, thought I might get in that way, and I did get into it. But again, once I got to the first question, I couldn't expand the text. And I do a lot of these type of surveys because I'm very interested in sharing my experience, etc. Normally, you can just expand the text, then you can see what you're talking about, and away you go. I've messaged Eyesight Cornwall. I'm a volunteer at Eyesight Cornwall, and I know them all there. I asked them to help, and they went off and did some research. They haven't come back with any answers yet. emailed West Streeting. I've had an acknowledgement of my email, but not a reply. And I sent a message to In Touch because I thought you might be able to help.
Well, we too have been trying to get in touch with the Department of Health and Social Care. We've not heard from them. We'd hoped to be able to talk to you about what they said, but we will include the answer if we can get it. Tell me, Margaret, if you were able to give your ideas to the NHS, given that you haven't been able to do it so far, perhaps you'd like to do it via our programme. What would you have said?
Well, one of my issues is that I went to the eye clinic last week and they had 9 people not turn up, which they often have people not turn up. 9 was a bit high. And I say, we should do something about it. We should talk to the people to find out what's getting in their way. But I know from sitting in the clinic, talking to people, there's all sorts of things that are barriers to them getting there. Because by definition, most visually impaired people need some help to get there. And I just think if we understood the patients and their problems, we would save wasting several appointments every clinic. And they're very expensive appointments. You're visiting a nurse, a photographer, a consultant, and a specialist nurse who gives you the injection.
And presumably the effect of that is to add to waiting list.
Yes, yes, that's the big problem. We have to fight to make sure we get our injections on time, because every week you are late, your vision can diminish.
Are you going to give up, or are you going to keep trying to fill
this? I don't ever give up. I'm 82 and I've been in the NHS for 40 years. I don't give up.
And we also heard this from Mike Foster, who also wanted to contribute to the survey.
I got onto change.nhs and there's an opening page and then you have to click a button and nothing happened. I use a assistive technology Supernova, a screen magnifier reader. I'm using a standard Windows 11 PC, the most up-to-date version of Supernova, but I could not get onto the NHS site.
Any indication of why not?
No, no reason at all. So I just jumped up and down and fired off emails to my MP and Tom, Dick and Harry in government around, and lo and behold, within 36 hours, I could get on.
So you got a response and you got on. What actually was it that you most wanted to say to this survey?
Well, basically, my concerns are about access and privacy. The main access one is patient notification of outpatient appointments, because they're only doing that by phone. And I'm one of the 4 out of 10 pensioners who doesn't use apps on a mobile phone. Obviously, phones are a major part of most people's life, but they need to communicate via email.
Well, since talking to Margaret and Mike, it seems that although Margaret has still heard nothing back, it looks as if our intervention has borne some fruit. The Department of Health and Social Care now say that since last Friday,
we have created a dedicated accessibility page at change.nhs.uk that has a range of formats so that everyone can take part, including a link to content that is fully readable for people using assistive technology. After listening to the community, the majority of digital accessibility issues have now been resolved, and we are working to resolve any remaining issues as a matter of urgency so that content is fully readable with assistive technology on the Change NHS platform.
They also told us that people can now submit their responses to the survey via email and by post. All this information can be found on their website. That's change.nhs.uk. Now, we've had this reaction provoked by guide dog owner Will Tom's experience when trying to give his dog some free running time.
His recall, so when we're going free running, and I whistle or call him back, is really not good. And he gets extremely distracted by other dogs with balls. When I first had him, there was a lot of times when he wouldn't come back. And if I was on my own in a giant field, it was really concerning and not safe.
I was horrified when it was stated on your programme that guide dog users were needing a sighted dog walker to get their dog back whilst the dog is on a free run. The fundamental of guide dog training is recall, simple and the most important. I find it incredible that this isn't dealt with in a proper professional manner before the guide dog is sent off to its owner.
Well, that email from an incredulous Liz Wood. Well, it's certainly not unusual to see pet dogs unresponsive to requests to come back from their owners, but surely it is a basic requirement for a guide dog. Peter Osborne is Guide Dog's Deputy Chief Executive. Isn't Liz Wood right, Pete? That's the first thing you'd expect from your guide dog.
Recall is a really important part of what we're doing with our dogs. However, the environment gets ever more distracting for them. So when they're off and about and having a nice bit of free exercise, there's so many distractions for them to focus on. It might be another dog's toys. It could be all sorts of interesting smells. And we'll provide all the support we can. But inevitably, there are occasions when a dog sometimes just will be slow to come back or may not come back as we intend.
Isn't it a sort of go-to requirement? Because, I mean, this is the situation some blind people find themselves in, where if they're taking their dog out for a free run themselves, which they'd obviously want to do, you know, if the dog doesn't come back and you're in a great big open area, that's very difficult, isn't it?
It can be very difficult. As a guide dog owner myself, I know it can be quite unnerving. You're thinking all the time, gosh, is there another distraction out there that the dog is really focused on? So it is very important for us, and it's something we put a lot of energy and a lot of work into. What we would say as well is, even if your dog is slightly slow to come back, always make sure that you praise your dog for doing so. Otherwise, your dog can build up a bit of a resilience and feel that it shouldn't come back to you. So it's important that even if the recall is a little bit slow, that you actually praise your dog.
But it's not a deal breaker, because I think that's what Liz Wood was suggesting, that it ought to be.
It's a part of the training that we instill in our dogs, and we would always hope that our dogs have excellent recalls, as some of it can be about the situation in which you are free running your dog. So if there is a lot of distraction and you know your dog is prone to responding to that kind of distraction, it's sometimes advisable to pick a quieter area or indeed one of these free running fields that you can actually now book so that your dog's got an opportunity to range and roam without any distraction. And if people are concerned about this, please contact us and we will do our best to support you.
I mean, we have heard anecdotally of the cases of this. How common do you think it is?
I think any dog can be prone to distraction. And as I think you commented yourself, you will often see dogs that indeed are distracted. I think it's about how we manage that as guide dog owners. And if we're feeling that is impacting us, let's pick a quieter, safer area to build up that bond and that response that we want from our dogs.
You made the point that people could come to you if they were worried. There was still some confusion amongst listeners when we addressed this about whether the practice was continuing of having a volunteer you could call on if giving your dog free running was a problem for whatever reason. Can you settle this once and for all? What is the situation? Is it part of the guide dog service to provide somebody if you need them?
It is our responsibility as guide dog owners to arrange for our dogs to get off-lead exercises. However, if that is not possible, or indeed your circumstances change, we will do everything possible to provide that service. And we do recruit volunteers who will come and collect your dog, take it for a free run and bring it back to you.
So it's a matter of people who need that contacting you and asking for it.
Yes, it is. And in the first instance, we would always ask that people do everything possible to arrange it for themselves. But if they do need support, we will endeavour to provide it.
Peter Osborne, thank you very much indeed. And that's it for today. Keep your questions coming and your comments, your outrage and even your approval. Email in touch at bbc.co.uk. Leave voice messages on 0161 836 1338. And from our website, you can get tonight's and previous editions of In Touch.